It's the Memorial Day sales event at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Grande. And we've got over 800 brand new Mazdas with outstanding incentives, like low monthly lease payments and low APR financing. Yep, it's just a great time to buy. So don't miss the Memorial Day sales event at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
Financing on approval of credit.
Hey there, welcome to The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan, and as always, so happy to be with you. As all you Sharks fans know, we are not fortunate enough to be enjoying playoff hockey here in San Jose, but I love this time of the year regardless. There is nothing better than high-stakes hockey, and I'm so looking forward to the PWHL playoffs, which start soon, too. In this edition of The Undercurrent, I am so pleased to welcome someone who has not only become a great and valued friend, but someone whose voice and opinion I trust more than almost anyone else's in the sports ecosystem. This is the truth. Shireen Ahmed is an award-winning sports activist who focuses on the intersections of racism and misogyny in sports. She is a senior contributor with CBC Sports, one of the hosts of the much-missed podcasts Burn It All Down, and a teacher of sports journalism and sports media at Toronto Metropolitan University. There's also so much more. She does so many things, and she's just so amazing. Her voice is so important, as anyone who knows her work will agree, and I think you will too. Here is the brilliant Shireen Ahmed. Hi, Shireen.
Hi.
I'm so happy to see you, always.
I love your face, so I really and enjoy your voice. So I'm really glad that I'm here. Thank you for having me.
You know, before we jump right in, you know, to the sort of interview, the formal interview, I'm trying to remember exactly how we know each other. And my recollection is, I mean, just we became fans of each other on social media. I think, yeah. I mean, I feel like it was actually, you know, Twitter at a time when it was maybe more of a sane environment, or at least there was a community that was created, you know, with like-minded individuals, people in sport who wanted to see more inclusion in sport. And I think that's it. I think we found each other on Twitter and then met.
Okay, that is a very lovely version. I was a big fan of yours for a long time. And then you followed me back is essentially what it is. And then Jonathan Torrens affirmed both of us. And he's like, I love it when, you know, Haligonians get together. And the funny thing is that I didn't know you were from Nova Scotia also first, which is usually what I expect people to start with. And then when I found out, I was like, okay, this tracks. It was that East Coast connection, but also you're very much someone in the hockey space who is a vanguard of change and of equity. And so, yeah, naturally I was drawn to you.
Well, I'm so glad that we've become real life friends as well. And I so value you and I value your time. So thank you for spending some of it with me today. Let's just start from the beginning. And I, you know, this isn't going to be so much about you, but like, because of course you want to talk about your work, but I do need, it does start with you and who you are and how you grew up and how this kind of work became important to you. How would you sort of, where did you find this?
So the stuff that I do, and people usually ask me, it's like, I'm a sports journalist and that's how I identify. I'm someone, and my editor will say, you're just a journalist. You don't have to qualify sport necessarily. And I agree with that. It's just that my wheelhouse is definitely sport and the intersections of race and gender more particularly. And I think that sport has always been a really big part of my life. And that, you know, how much I love the East Coast and how much I love Halifax. But the reality is, Halifax in the 80s wasn't very racially diverse.
No.
And so I was very often out, but sports gave me an in. And it embraced all the rambunctiousness and sort of tenacity that I had as a child. There was no better way for me to do that than on the ice. Played hockey in a little at the Halifax Forum and little Montreal Canadiens jerseys, which is the only way my mother would let me play because she was such a hardcore, she is such a core hardcore Habs fan. But sports really gave me an in into I won't say community, because when you're that young, I don't necessarily know that it's community in the same way. But it kind of gave me an in. I wasn't an outlier anymore. I was really included. And I began to think about sports as a vehicle for really difficult conversations as I grew up and grew older. And there always were injustices in sport that I saw or witnessed or, you know, but I never really thought about chronicling them and telling stories. Like, I consider myself a storyteller as well. And then I got older, like I did some stints. I was like a stay-at-home mom for like over a decade, which is really important to me. I have four kids. But I love my cat the most. We just talked about that. And I think it sort of gave me a way to really think about sports, and in particular hockey. Hockey is one that I've struggled with in a lot of ways. Like, I love the sport, there's no doubt, and have a strong connection to it. But it's really hard for me to not be critical. And sometimes people say to me, well, like, you ruin all the fun for yourself, but it's impossible for me to, at this point of who I am.
Right. I feel that so strongly. I mean, because when, you know, I think people think that we just, you know, sit on our perch and say, this is wrong and this is wrong and this is wrong. And that is our only concern. But it's coming from this place of wanting better. It's coming from this place of seeking justice and equity and fairness. And like, it's coming from love.
That, I think that's what people forget. And I'm so glad you put it like that. People forget that change is born from necessity, but also care. And care looks like love. And I think about something James Baldwin had said, that he reserves the right to criticize America because he loves her so much. Mm. And I think about that. It's so instructive for me because it's like, I love this sport. I don't necessarily love the culture, and I don't think the culture always loves me back, or you back for that matter. There's some spaces that doesn't love that, that don't love us, but that doesn't mean we're not going to keep loving it. I mean, what's better than a great hockey game? Like, truly to watch.
I think that
like what's more fun. It's probably the sport. Like, my dad refuses to watch with my mom anymore because she just screams too much. And I realize that I've inherited some of that. Like, it's hard for me, Tara, to sit in a press box. It is hard, especially like, you know, not that I'm going for one team and like,
but you're not supposed to get excited, right?
You're not, but I'm like, I am not dead. I love this game. And that was an incredible goal. And look at that. And look at that save. And I teach sports journalism now, and I had students with me at the Battle on Bay Street game, Toronto versus Montreal, at the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. And one of my students who was right beside me, like, got up and basically was cheering. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. But underneath, I'm like curling my toes.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And so that is it. This all comes from a place of just wanting sport to be better and just a welcoming space. So how did this become your work?
I never really thought it would be. So people ask me, is this your dream job? And yes, but I never dreamed of it. I didn't think being a columnist, a senior contributor with CBC Sports would be my thing. I didn't think I'd be a university professor or teaching. Those were not things that I thought were necessarily possible for me. I began writing full time in 2010 or 11. I think a little bit of both, but at the time, my manner was really unconventional. Like, people wouldn't pay me to write, so I would do content and then I would self-publish on Tumblr, and then went to Medium as that kind of grew, those forums, which are still around but not actively used. I was on Twitter since 2010. I loved Twitter. I initially went to Twitter because soccer, which is my first love. I went there and I found community around World Cups and watch with, like you said, like-minded people. And I really found community. I mean, I found you. I found Renee, one of my best friends. Renee has the Black Girl Hockey Club. I found her through social media.
Yeah.
And you're right. There was a time where Twitter in particular was a place to meet and connect in such a beautiful way. It's also a fantastic, or it was a fantastic journalism tool.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about it. So I started blogging about my own experiences in sport and chronicling and tracking. Also very specifically Muslim women in sport and their experiences and what it was like. There was a lot of exclusion because of hijab bans. And then I began to connect the dots between bodily agency and patriarchy and how women's bodies were being controlled. And, you know, I do a lot of work still around that, around the world, and how women, even if they want to wear longer shorts, are often told no. And this is not something that I think we realize until it happens. Then you're like, what? A lot of these rules for uniform and kit in sport are so quietly laid. That's only when they are transgressed do we find out about them. Mm-hmm. Like a couple of years ago, the Norwegian beach handball team wanted to wear longer shorts, or the Germany gymnastics team in Tokyo decided to wear leggings, and it was considered like, what? So that's very similar to Muslim women not being allowed to cover if they want to.
Right.
It's about choice. So that really resonated with me in my whole life. I knew I wanted to work to advocate for women. I knew that. I just didn't know it would manifest this way, but I'm happy I'm here.
So what's on your mind lately? I mean, you know, you are so prolific. You put out a great column called Joy Drop, which I so appreciate, not just because it's the name of my band, but also because you actually are intentional about finding, you know, some positive stories to enlighten people. But, you know, hockey is one of your great loves. There's a lot of momentum in women's hockey. I know that that's a big deal for you. What else is on your mind right now?
I love that you said that. Joy Drop is like something I'm hugely proud of, and people really embraced, and I'm really appreciative of that. Mm. And it's basically like what made me feel good this week. Last night I had already filed Joy Drop with my editor, and at like 11, I'm like, oh, I found this thing on Instagram of this incredible pastry chef from Brooklyn who makes her desserts accessible to poor families in the projects. And they're having like quiches and butter croissants, and like, it's amazing. And her speaking about it is so empowering, and that's joyful. So I got so excited about that. But it's really funny because I write critically on Monday. Like I write columns. So I piss people off on Monday, and then I'm like, oh, let's be joyful on Friday. So it's a bit of a, like, my
that's
editor.
A good balance.
Yeah, my editor's like, people don't know what to do with you because they're really mad at you on Tuesday. And then by Friday, they're like, oh, this, look at this cat video. It's so cute. So I think for me, joy is resistance. And that's when it's, and truthfully, it's been really, really hard to sort of thread that needle and walk a line where the last 6 months with all the trauma in Palestine and the, it's just been so distressing for me personally, and, you know, and for the community that I'm a part of, and for so many people around the world, but you're trying to find joy. And I think that's where the resistance part comes in, is that you have to keep living and you have to keep doing that to keep, you know, it's also a form of solidarity with others. And, you know, you, whether it's food or music or art or sport, like you find that within there. And it's some days, Tara, I'm like, I am not feeling joyful at all. I remember being at Edmonton and reading about a school shooting of children in Texas. Mm. And I had to write a column about the battle of Alberta. The Flames and the Oilers were going to the playoffs, and, you know, Edmonton was buzzing, and the school shooting happened, and my stomach just dropped, and I'm like, there's no way I can write about this now. I need to write about the shooting, and I have the latitude in my editors are great. My bosses at CBC give me a lot of space and bandwidth to write what I need to. And it was hard. I think I just cried all over my keyboard as I wrote it. You know, I'm a mom, and the idea of a school shooting is the most terrifying thing in the world to us. Like, there's nothing more precious than the safety of our kids. Nothing. And and all kids, not just mine.
Yes.
Anyone's. And so it's trying to find that and, you know, like, just balancing that out. It's tough some days, but I'm grateful for it, particularly when the industry is shrinking in the way it is. But I'm grateful, very grateful for what I do. I get to meet the coolest people. I get to go on amazing podcasts with superb individuals like you. So,
oh, well, that's very kind of you. I do want to jump significantly into the PWHL and you know what that is doing to shift things entirely. But before we get to that, is there anything else that's like a fire in your belly right now? Like, if you you're preparing for your Monday column, that's a it's a critical column. Like, what is burning for you?
I mean, we're coming up to the Olympics, right? And CBC are right holders, CBC Sports are right holders, and I'm grateful for the ability to be able to say, I don't love this. I don't love this about France and the system of sport that excludes Muslim women from sport, which is obviously something I care about. But I'm also learning about what justice in sport means, and it means different things to different people, but also recognizing that I'm also really, really sad about NAIA banning trans athletes in sport, and the NCAA will do it as well. And that is making me really sad and really frustrated, because Dawn Staley said it and we all nodded and we were like, yeah, we love Dawn Staley, but oh, we don't like this. Like, that's not how inclusion works. Selective inclusion is actually exclusion.
Right.
And that is firing me up. And I have to tell you, I get a lot of like hate mail and mean comments, but I never get as much hate as when I advocate for trans athletes.
Yes.
It's unbelievable, the amount of venom spewed at me. And I feel really strongly about this, and I'm not going to change my mind that I believe that sports should truly be inclusive. So those are the things that occupy my thoughts a lot, like exclusion and maltreatment and mistreatment. I am hopeful. I'm optimistic. And then things like the PWHL happen, and I'm like, excuse me, I'm able to pivot and I'm able to focus on that and enjoy the moment. I love that we have women's hockey games on a Tuesday night now, randomly. Mm. It's amazing. And this last weekend I had a conflict. I was like, this Saturday I have conflict. The Bell Center game between Toronto and Montreal is on, but also the Women's Champs League in Europe is on. So there's, I have four screens going, and it's wild, and I love it here.
I mean, that is so awesome. Let's sort of start from the puck drop on the league, which was January 1st of this year. You wrote in your column how emotional a moment that was for you. Can you take me there?
Yeah, I was on vacation for the first week of January, so I wasn't assigned to go to the game. But I sat on my sofa and I teared up. I teared up watching Jaina Hefford drop the puck, because she teared up, and then I kind of lost it. And I'm someone who's fairly measured in how, but I have to tell you, if the same thing happened at the Scotiabank Arena, I teared up. Mm-hmm. And you have to be super professional. You have to talk to the athletes, you interview the coaches, and you're in the press box, and you want to be, you know, in your space and in the right head game. But I couldn't help but feel, here are these little girls in their hockey sweaters and waving rally towels. And for the whole time, I've been to a fair amount of Leafs games. It was completely different. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before in that arena for hockey. And it was for these women players. And I'm getting goosebumps just talking about
it. Me too.
Like, it was the lights, the purple lights were flashing, the noise, like the energy. I was like, I want this space. Mm. And it was incredible. And the first game, though, even though I was on my sofa and I was texting two of my colleagues at the same time, One thing interesting has happened. I have never wanted to go to Ottawa so bad in the winter, and I made it there with Devin and my friend Ben Steiner. We went to go watch a game. And it was wonderful. And watching them play in Ottawa was wonderful. We saw Boston play Ottawa and Boston won. But then you're walking by and Jamie Lee Rattray's there, the Canadian women's, you know, the world champion team, the Olympic team. And she's like, hey, and I've been around this women hockey place for over 10 years. So there's a lot of these incredible players that I've seen and watched and covered for a while. So you kind of, it's still not the largest space, which is kind of cool because you all know each other and people are really wonderful. Like when we're in a scrum or something, you kind of know everybody and people really help each other out. And it's a nice, it's kind of this like sort of this community of sports journalists and reporters as well, which is really nice. So the whole thing is good. I mean, it's not utopic, nothing is.
Right.
But I really, the way that people have responded has been incredible.
Well, you know, one thing that has really struck me is we are all too familiar with the women's sports naysayers, and they are still out there. Even recently, a big name former NHLer is out there dissing women's sports on social media. So it's like this like compulsion that some men just cannot get away from. But a lot of that with the PWHL dropped away when it started, and the conversation really just became about hockey and the quality of the play. I was very struck by that. And it just showed me that the product just needed to be accessible, because it's not new to any of us who have been paying attention, watching world championships, watching Olympics. We've known, but all of a sudden more people know, and it's undeniable.
I mean, we know the product, right? We know the product has been phenomenal. You need to just watch Natalie Spooner skate. Like, I remember watching her and I was sitting at the end. They used to play in the MasterCard Arena in Etobicoke, like the Toronto Furies of the former CWHL. And I was sitting behind the net and she came skating at the net. And I remember thinking, holy shit, she's fast. Mm. And like, she's a mom now and still one of the top scorers of the league. And we know the product is incredible. We know Blair Turnbull is going to hit someone. We know Pooh is going to give us some goal. We know, you know, Erica Finkel, Erin Finkel, sorry, of Boston will do this incredible save. We know these things. She'll save. Like, we know across the board what is going to happen. You can predict some stuff like New York. Let's not sleep on New York. Like, you know, Packers there, Jill Saulnier there. Like, I just, you know, Sarah Nurse here in Toronto just brings this incredible energy. Like, it's really fun to watch Taylor Heisey in Minnesota, and Minnesota being such a huge Midwest hockey town, just is really important. And the product, like you said, would Eric Lindros bring his daughter to the opening day if it wasn't? Do you know what I mean? Like, not that we need men's validation, but at this point, getting the men's support, professional hockey player support, is great. Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs all wore PWHL Toronto sweaters on the first day, which I thought was really cool. I really, really did like that. And I think there's place for, you know, camaraderie within this. And the games are so much fun. They're at the Mattamy Center in Toronto, and I think they can outgrow that. The tickets sold out for season ticket holders, and now having a PWHL purple toque with a pom-pom is like a prized possession.
Oh, you can't get the gear, man. It's
like, you don't understand. I remember being at a game, and I'm like someone who knows the comms people fairly well. And I said to Paul Kratz, I said, Kratzy, I need a sweatshirt. Where do I buy a purple sweatshirt? I can't get one. And then he went back and they had one left over in my size. And I'm like, I have a decent amount. I can't get a toque, Tara. I've tried. I cannot get a toque. And, but I love it. I love that as well. I love that there's room for growth. Like I said, nothing's perfect, right? But the conversations around it, the news, the buzz, the ability for young boys and girls to watch and say that I want this and I want to be that. It's just, and hockey players, women's hockey players are some of the nicest people in the world. They will still stop and autograph no matter what. And I've seen their interactions with players, with fans, excuse me, with young girl fans, and they articulate that this is for them. And right. There's something so sincere about that.
Well, it's very different. You know, they have not grown up expecting anything. You know, I think when you're an elite boys, men's player, you just have this expectation that you have this path and you have this adoration that is built in, and that you have, you know, the ability to earn an income and so on and so forth. That's all just kind of built in to the system. And so women's hockey players have not had that. And so they don't for a second take it for granted. And they all, and I say this all without exception, of every women's hockey player I've ever met, take the role model mantle incredibly seriously. Like it's amazing.
In a way, and I'm not saying that like you're Hillary Knight and I'm Marie-Philippe Poulin, but where we are in media and in sports media, that role is not just for the players, it's for coaches, like officials, people in sports media. They need to see us here because historically we haven't been here for very long, right? And I think that you're right, that idea of mentoring and showing who we are to the world and in the sports ecosystem is so, so important. So I take that also. I need people to see me. I need people to see a brown woman in a hijab in the press box. I need them to see me at a hockey game. And I need all kinds of people to see everybody there. I need there to be men in the press box. Like I keep saying I need, but I'm saying the world needs rather, right? Yeah. The world needs it, needs to see men covering women's sports, women's covering men's sports and everything in between. I think that that is so important for the industry as well. And one of the funny things I was going to mention, Caitlin Clark's salary, people were talking about, made this big buzz when people found out that Caitlin Clark will make less than a bench warming Raptors, Toronto Raptors player. Right. And the Raptors didn't do great this season. So that's, and they're local to me. So that's why I'm using that example. But if you know anything about women's sports, like you said, having a salary is fairly recent, like pretty recent.
Very.
And like, it's not going to be, we want it to be 3 million. And I understand how these people are now paying attention and being like, well, wait a minute. These players are only getting this much. You're like, it wasn't built in a day, but we have been building. It has, people have been doing this for decades. The groundwork was laid and we're trying. But like you said, those naysayers, they have been huge obstacles in our way before, but we're like, okay, you can stay there and be a wall. We'll figure out how to get around it. And I think that it's still growing. I'm so heartened. I don't think we're going backwards. Mm. I know we're only going forwards. I mean, there's so much potential. And, you know, Canada still doesn't have a basketball league or a professional soccer team or soccer league yet. We're getting one in 2025 with Project 8, but we're still building. And I think people forget that sometimes. So I'm optimistic. This brings me joy. This conversation brings me joy. The idea that there's possibility brings me joy.
Well, in the words of Kim Davis, it's a movement, not a moment.
I love that.
that's what I feel. I do feel like now, like we're past the tipping point, you know, like this is all here to stay. Like we're not going to forget about Caitlin Clark. You know, we're not going to forget about, even here in the Bay Area, like I went to a Bay FC game and it's already the second highest attendance in the NWSL. Just on its second game of its inaugural season. Like I feel obviously there's a long way to go in many aspects of women's sport, but it does feel like, okay, we're here now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you go see the NWSL. That's the only games I've actually been to have been in Portland, ironically. I don't know why. I have a massive connection. I've been a fan of that
team.
Well,
they team. Have some Canadian icons. Have a so huge, it yeah. makes, yes, I understand.
It makes sense. I give myself the grace for that. I've seen Canadians play in Europe. I saw Ashley Lawrence and interviewed her after a Chelsea game versus Man U. So that was a lot of fun. But you're right. Like, it is so great. And you mentioned this before that the rhetoric wasn't about anything but just the hockey. And when you go to PWHL and you go to those games or go to the NWSL, it really is about the caliber of play. And the PWHL was very physical from jump, like from puck drop mm-hmm. day one. It really, really was physical. And people, I think it's almost like people who don't watch women's sports are surprised how good women's sports actually are. And even with the NWSL, like the type of soccer in the United States is different than the one in Europe or to other leagues, but it's really important to watch it and see all of them. I mean, there's room for all of it, which I find really exciting. And in Kansas City, they built the first stadium and they played Portland won, but they built a stadium specifically for this team and it was the first of its kind. There's some argument about, you know, that whether it was truly the first or not, but the reality is that it sold out and Patrick Mahomes and his wife are co-owners of that team. And then you see so many people interested in buying women's teams, and Serena Williams recently said she would mm-hmm. like to buy a WNBA team. I mean, who doesn't want a WNBA team? I mean, the hoodies are still the dopest thing in sports.
Yes,
they really are. Those orange hoodies are like recognizable.
They're iconic. Yeah.
Yeah, like if I ever came into a bazillion dollars, I would 100%. No, but I don't think I couldn't buy a sports team because I would rather report on it, to be honest. And as much as I was excited about the Scotia League going or the WNBA exhibition game in Toronto, and I was lucky to break the story that Toronto would be getting a WNBA team, I was really excited to be able to do that. For me, the most important thing is being able to report it.
Right.
And because that's where my passion is, I love that it's there. I love that people can go and be fans, but I loved that I get to work at it.
So what's next is my question. You know, like, yes, this groundswell is here. Sponsors finally getting it, you know. I mean, there are some who have always been there. You know, got to give props to Canadian Tire and really great companies like that who just from the inception. But, you know, I think you see like companies are understanding like, oh, wow, this is a moneymaker. And I feel like we always knew that it was going to be. But so that's happening. What's next? Like as you know, those of us who are fans and work in the media try to sort of, you know, shepherd this moment. What do we have to do?
That's so interesting because I'm a journalist. Everything's like last minute for me, right? I make the deadlines, but just on the deadline. And like, I wish I was a planner. I wish I was one of those people that I have vision, but I don't know. My vision is to keep covering this, keep telling stories, keep encouraging other young folks, particularly those in the margins, to get involved into sports journalism. But I also recognize that, like, from where I sit, the industry is changing and the way that we tell stories is shifting, and we have to adapt to that. We have to be really dynamic. I would love to see expansion. I mean, I'm all about expansion, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't we have 12 teams in the NWSL? I realize the geographical constraints, and that's been one of the issues in Canada with professional teams. But I think that if you look at the model of the PWHL, how they're pretty localized in a way. Like, you can take Ottawa to Montreal is like 45 minutes right. on a bus or whatever. And Minnesota's, I think, the furthest one out. I was surprised there was no team in Calgary, to be honest.
Me too.
But it makes sense because Calgary is very deserving. I mean, they're all deserving. I mean, people in Pittsburgh are clamoring. Like, everyone wants women's hockey. And I think, you know, Jaina and team know this, and it will grow. So there has to be a little bit of patience. I think sometimes sports fans are not the most patient people in the world. And what's next is the building of rivalries and legacies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really like the idea of Toronto, Montreal going tete-a-tete, like, a lot. That makes me really happy because why not? And You know, I remember one thing, and it was a learning moment for me when I was in Scotiabank in the press center interviewing afterwards. I was asking some of the players about from Toronto about, you know, this moment. And they're like, yes, we get it. It's a great moment. We love the fans. We're here for the fans too, but we're also here to win this damn hockey game. And that was like, yes, it is about the sport. It is them being role models and, you know, building up this incredible thing, but they're also really damn good hockey players and excellent athletes. And that's what it's about. It is really about sport. So I think not losing sight of that, because sometimes with all the fun things we get, like, it really is about winning the game, and they're competitors and they're fierce and they're dedicated. So just kind of keeping that in mind. I mean, to be honest, I have no idea how to answer your question. So I'm just making up all this stuff.
No, it's perfect. I don't know how to answer that question either. You know, I mean, I think you keep doing what you do, and I got to keep doing what I do. And,
definitely.
You know, I think just amplification and support. But yes, you're right. I think, you know, just the more franchises, the more games, the more visibility, the more it's truly like, if you can see it, you can be it. And I think it's just immensely important.
I do also want to take this opportunity, because I would be remiss if I didn't. When I talk about teaching moments within sport culture, I think about that a lot. And you know that I'm a fan of you as a person, because I think you're fucking awesome. But also what you do and how you speak your mind, Tara, I still teach in my classes. When you took that moment on hometown hockey to talk about culture, that's not great in hockey, about abuse after the Kyle Beach story came out. I just really wanted to take that moment, because I don't think you understand the impact that you had. I mean, I'm sure you do. This is not the first time you're hearing this, and not from me, but I wanted to let people know that in addition to doing what we do, that has to still be part of it. And mm-hmm. that's not something that's lost on me either. Like, we didn't sit out here to start being advocates on things, but sometimes as women, we have to be.
No, I mean, it's not a hobby, right? Like, you don't put on your activist hat. It's not something you leave at work and don't take home with you at night. You know, I think there are people who don't understand that. But there are people, I think, like us, who feel this so deeply, so personally, so profoundly. And so yes, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, as you know, I felt very supported in being able to say what I said during that hometown hockey in Belleville.
Which was off the cuff and not rehearsed, which is wild.
No. And I've gone back 100 times, like, oh, I wish I would have said that, or I stumbled on that, but whatever. But I knew what was in my heart. And for sure, there were a lot of people who got behind it, but as you can imagine, and you know, when you exist in this space, there are certainly a lot of people who, continue to, hold a great deal of resentment towards me for it, but that is too bad, isn't it? Like, I mean,
it's not an us problem. It's a them problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a sense of right and wrong. And to me, there was clearly a lot wrong. But thank you. I mean, the fact that, you know, that I have your confidence, and, that means a lot, because I respect you so much. I'm going to leave you with this question, and it's a biggie, but I am sure you know how to answer it, because it's just one of these lines that gets thrown out there all the time. Keep politics out of sport. But I mean, what do you say to that? Like, for certain people, it's obviously, it's for them, it's possible. For us, it's mm-hmm. not possible.
I've never heard anyone from a margin say to keep sports out of sport. Like politics out of sports, because that's not a reality for Black queer women in the WNBA. That's not a reality for, you know, women in hockey. It's not a reality. Like for people, like for disabled athletes, it's not a reality. Like so many things in so many ways, you know, when we've got when anti-Semitism and Islamophobia and anti-Blackness, anti-Indigeneity, when, you know, ableist and when ableism is real, when transphobia is real, when homophobia is real, when all these things are real, how can it not be? you know, political. And I reject that. Like, that's not a thing. I'm like, the person saying that has probably never had to deal with it.
Right.
And the problem with that is finding solutions of things. And in my work on this and areas of injustice in sport, people who are at the head table making decisions are very often the ones who feel injustice is the least. So like my friend, Marcia Gay Knight, says, look around the room. She said this at the ESPNW summit in Toronto last year. Look around the room, see who's not there and bring them in. And you were asking, how do we change things? And those are some of the more tangible ways, and keeping communities like this, you know, shared ideas of liberation and solidarity in sport. There is more of a history of liberation and resistance in sports than we think. It goes back to old times, like predating even Muhammad Ali, like way, way far back. And I think that now we see it, you know, with Billie Jean King, who I had the pleasure of meeting this year. And we see so many people that do such wonderful things for sport, and we keep that momentum going, and you ignore the naysayers. Those people will keep chirping. Yeah. And one of the things is there's this whole idea that, oh, they're in the basement somewhere. They're not in basements. They actually can be in boardrooms too.
Yeah.
But we keep doing what we're doing. My son is 19, and to everything, he's like, he has responses. That's a skill issue. So if someone comes to me and says, oh, I don't understand what the F you're doing here, I'm like, that's a skill issue, bro. It's not a me problem. It's a you problem. So it's almost like taking these comments back and just being like either witty about it or ignoring it and keep going. And we wouldn't have gotten here if we paid heed to that nonsense in the first place. How do you think like Jane Hufford played? How do you think people, Billie Jean King, like her whole life, there's a movie about everybody that was a naysayer. And you keep going. And the wonderful thing is like some days, like I remember one day I was sort of feeling a bit like, oh, I was working on a story that was a little more difficult. I was walking down the street, and then I see someone just wearing Sarah Nurse jersey and just walking around. And I was like, you know what? Okay. Or a Soraya Tinker jersey. Like, okay. All right. We're good. We keep doing things like supporting communities like you certainly do with Black Girl Hockey Club, with keeping conversations going, to keep talking and to keep, and also keep loving the sport. The biggest win that our haters will get is if we leave. I've tried to break up with men talking so many times. I've tried to break up with the Habs, Tara, you know this.
Oh, I know.
And I like, but then they win. They win, right? Like, so.
Yeah, no, just give in. You're a lifer. But you did tell me that, you know, your focus is so much more on the PWHL than the NHL right now. And that's great. That's great because it exists.
Well, I get to love hockey in a way that's healthy. And my mother is, like I said, a lifelong. She's a lifer. He loves the NHL. She pays attention to the draft. She can give you stats on the Habs. I'm like, why would you want that? But she loves that. And there's a place for everybody there. And I want her there. I have friends that work for the Habs, like, and people I love and respect and admire, and they need to be there. Right. And it's great. I personally, I'm just enamored with women's hockey because I remember vividly when there was a time where it wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And now, like, there's a spot at the Mattamy Center for me. There's food for journalists. There's an incredible team. And shout out to PWHL Toronto and Maria Tassoni, like, and the crew. Like, they are so great. I met Trinity Elliott, who is a comms person for New York PWHL. Like, they're formidable, and they're doing the work. Like, they're doing the work. So I'm so grateful for them. And I think about all these people, like, what if Billie Jean King had listened when someone said no?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where would we, what if someone said to Serena, you know, for Serena, someone said no, for Marie-Philippe Poulin, someone said no. And even though when you listen to Pooh talk about the people that supported her parents, her brother, it was a small group at the time still. And look at her impact on this sport. Look at what the Canadian women's soccer team is doing, you know, and how they're rallying behind Quinn, who is a trans player, and who, you know, so I think that's really important, is to keep doing what we do.
I love that so much. I love that so much. What would happen if Billie Jean King had listened to No? But There we are. I adore you so much, and thank you for this. This is a great conversation.
Thank I love you. You too. It was great. I love talking to you, and I love seeing you, and we could have talked for several more hours, but I appreciate how lucky your listeners are, because the conversations that you have are great, not just for San Jose, but for like the hockey world. And yeah, you just make it better. So thank you for having me.
It's just so refreshing and so wonderful to talk to Shireen. We really could talk for hours. Like I said in the introduction, I trust her voice so much. I trust her take. I trust her opinion. She is the person I go to when I'm struggling with something in the sort of, you know, sports equity inclusion realm. She's the best. So, Shireen, thank you for doing this. All of you out there, thank you for listening. I really hope you appreciated her as much as I do. And that's it for this episode. There are more to come. Our season is not complete, even though Sharks hockey is. So stay tuned. There'll be another episode in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, keep your sticks on the ice and your fins above water.